Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning and welcome to Ag Matters Radio. Dr. Illig, are you on the line with me?
Yes, good morning. I'm here. How are you?
Hi, good. Thanks so much for joining me this morning. It's great to hear your voice again. It's been a while since we've connected.
That's true. You've gone off and done other things.
And you are still working on rhodiola, which I am so excited this morning to chat with you about it and to tell our listeners of Ag Matters Radio what is going on in this world of Alaska rhodiola. But first, Dr. Illig, I always like to start my guests off by telling listeners a little bit about themselves, their connection to Alaska, and then their connection to this world of agriculture. So how did you get here?
Well, in a roundabout sort of way, I went to medical school in Seattle through the WAMI program. If you're familiar with that, that's the regionalized medical school training program that includes Alaska and now also Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, but that was about 40 years ago.
Okay.
And I'd always wanted to come back. And so about 16 years ago, I was able to come back and open up my own practice here and just tootling along and enjoying my life in Alaska. And I happened to stumble across an article in a science magazine that I read every 2 weeks called Science News. This was, Amy, this was almost exactly 10 years ago. I remember March of 2008 when I read this article about this interesting herbal medicinal plant that grows in the Arctic and subarctic. And at that time, I had a conversation with a gentleman who was then the state auditor. And he mentioned to me in passing about Alaskan agriculture, because I grew up in South Dakota and had a warm spot in my heart for farmers. And he mentioned, you know, how hard it is for farmers to grow anything here because the plants that they grow really aren't suited very well for this environment, requiring a lot of infrastructure, greenhouses, etc. And when I stumbled across this plant, which at that time, 10 years ago, already had a lot of good scientific evidence to its health benefits, I thought, I wonder if we can grow this in Alaska and take advantage of our subarctic climate here to grow a, an economically feasible plant for farmers.
Yeah.
So that was my original idea.
Okay. And so 10 years ago, an article in a science magazine, and then so you, our paths crossed because I was managing a program at the Division of Agriculture, a grant program. And which grant was it that you first applied for?
You know, I think it was a specialty crop grant.
That makes sense. Yep. The specialty crop competitive grant, right?
Yes. And because I needed a little bit of money to just kind of like pull together some resources. At that time, it was primarily to learn more about it. By then, I had discovered that in Alberta, Canada, they had also thought about this as a way to diversify their crops. And there's the Alberta Rhodiola Rosea Growers Organization. I can only say that once a day. it's also known as ARGO. And they had a scientist there, a government scientist whom I contacted, and we worked something out where he sent me some seeds, and I then started to grow it. Over the course of 2 years, I was able to produce 100,000 seedlings out of my front yard.
On your front yard. I remember those pictures.
I can tell you my neighbors were very worried. And then the problem I had was, you know, I'm not part of the ag community here. I'm part of the medical and the aviation community. But then I had to find some farmers who were willing to put these in their fields to see if it was viable.
Right. And that was part of the grant project, right? We rallied up some growers from across the state and tried to stir up their interest in trying to grow this plant and seeing what it would do. Because if I remember correctly, the plant grows, or relatives of this plant grow in the wild in the Arctic, right?
Yes, we have our indigenous species, Rhodiola integrifolium, which is a sister species. It's much smaller. You know, it grows all over on the north side of Hatcher Pass, for example. Other areas, you know, that are a little bit higher and slightly more moist. And I thought because of the similarity to, you know, the species were related, the similarity to the environment, that Rhodiola rosea would grow here.
Right.
So it does.
Yeah. So what year was it that we first had farmers putting plants in the ground? How long ago was that?
You know, I was able to get Mark Rempel of Rempel Farms to plant some in 2010. Those were plants that I had started in 2009.
That's right.
And also Shelley Rainwater in Homer. They were kind enough. I mean, they were like, you want me to take care of these plants for 5 years if you don't know if I'll make any money?
Right.
Yeah, so we started there. And then with the grant money from the competitive specialty crop grant, I was able to put together a couple of talks bringing this researcher from Alberta to Alaska where he could explain, you know, how they had started.
Yeah.
And that's how it all rolled out.
So I posted a picture with today's social media post about the show of the root mass of the plant. Mm-hmm. But for folks that have never seen this plant before and are wondering what in the world are we talking about, can you use your descriptive skills here and paint a picture for listeners of what does rhodiola actually look like above ground?
Yes, it's Rhodiola rosea, and there are about... Well, it depends on, there's been a recent taxonomic change, you know, about 10 or 15 years ago. So depending on how you label it, there may be 60 or 70 or 100 different species, but they all have similar things in common. It's a succulent. It is the Rhodiola rosea, which is the one that we're talking about here, grows to be a small-sized bushy plant about, you know, 18 inches tall and kind of bushy. The leaves are thick and fleshy, and it grows out of a root ball. And again, I'm not a botanist, so I'm just going to use general laypeople terminology.
That's perfect.
It grows out of a root ball that increases in diameter over its lifespan. And that part that we are interested in is a very thick, fleshy rhizome, and it has a lot of rootlets and root hairs coming out of it, which are removed. But the plant itself is, like I said, it comes out in separate stalks with separate leaf structures that are fleshy, succulent consistency.
Yeah, and so when people hear Rhodiola rosea, is it in the rose family? Is it related to a rose? Are there flowers involved?
No, there are flowers.
Okay.
But the reason it's called rosea is because when the root is relatively mature, it takes 4 to 5 years to get the plant to a level of maturity where it's worth harvesting. And you slice the root, it has a strong rose-like odor to it.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I just learned something new. Although I've known about this project for 7 or 8 years, I just learned something new. Or maybe I just forgot. I'm sure you said that to me before. Okay, so just a quick interruption real quick to remind folks that you're listening to Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and this morning I am chatting with Dr. Illig about Rhodiola rosea. And what an exciting thing this was 10 years ago. And I'll admit, I was one of those people when you applied for the grant money, or I think you called me first and we chatted on the phone, and I thought, who is this doctor who wants to get some farmers to grow this plant for what reason? Like, what are we talking about here? So let's get into that side of the equation. What was the point? What is the benefit of this plant, and why did you want to see if it would grow in Alaska?
Well, you know, when you're new in town, you have a lot of time on your hands. And so I just was first looking for sort of an interesting project, and this just struck me as being the right thing to do. I had two goals. Number one is I was convinced that this is a very useful plant for human health. Actually, I should say three goals. So it's a plant useful for human health. And so I thought it would be a great idea to grow it and really get a good, high-quality cultivated plant growing. The second goal was to help with the plant's sustainability. Most of the world's supply of Rhodiola rosea or rosea for the botanical companies that use its ingredients comes primarily from wild harvest. Wild harvest in the mountains of Siberia and northern China. And because in the wild this plant takes so long to grow and the demand is increasing, it's being over-harvested and being threatened in many areas of this part of the world. And so I thought if we can grow it in farms, we can unload some of that pressure on these wild plants. Thirdly, and most importantly, I thought, what a great way for farmers to make money.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
So those three things just kind of combined in my mind and seemed to be, you know, a reasonable project to get into.
Yeah. And so let's talk about those medical benefits to the body. What does this plant do if you ingest these, you know, ingredients?
Right. Well, first of all, there are many ingredients in, you know, in root material and plants that you grind up and use either as a tea or an extract. But Rhodiola rosea has some specifically unique chemicals you don't find in any of the other Rhodiola species. This is a sedum plant, and there are some biochemical properties that are, common to them, but rosavins are the chemicals that are unique to the Rhodiola rosea. And historically, the plant had been used for thousands of years by circumpolar people and northern people for its stimulating effects. It has the ability to, in some respects, kind of a caffeine-like effect without the heart racing and the blood pressure issues. It helps people be more focused. It gives athletes more stamina. So it's been used primarily for thousands of years for those effects, especially in warriors, athletes, things like that.
Okay.
And then in the 1940s and 50s and into the 60s, the Soviets started looking at it also for its additional health benefits. And these chemicals, while they don't do anything specific like you would take a specific medication for, these are chemicals that the Soviets labeled adaptogens. And adaptogens are chemicals that actually help support the body's normal biochemical functions that may be faltering from stress or illness.
Okay.
So in that respect, you know, some people say, well, it's kind of like snake oil, whatever ails you. And that may be true because it really does help fortify normal biochemical pathways that may be suffering, and therefore it has different effects in different people.
Okay, very good. So,
beauty though, I should say, there's no known toxicity whatsoever. You can't overdose on this like you could from other energy
stimulants
or supplements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen people who have drank too much coffee. I've witnessed that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, so that was, again, one of your goals was to get this, this medically viable or this, you know, an ingredient available in a sustainably harvested way, et cetera. So flash us forward a little bit. We started in 2010. You had these 100,000 seedlings that you spread out to growers across the state. And then what happened?
Well, I formed a farmers co-op, which the intent of which was to bring growers together and learn from each other. Simply because there was no playbook on this. We could go with a little bit of the experience from Alberta, but their conditions are different. They, of course, had, you know, a fully funded scientific program to help farmers learn, you know, best cultivation and harvesting practices, and we didn't have that.
Right.
So I formed this group, and there were, you know, a handful of growers who were pretty serious, and then several growers who were dabbling in it more for fun and personal use. And together we figured out a couple of different ways of planting, a few different ways of doing that, which was the most important, which is weed control,
right?
Without chemicals. And so we were able to get to our first harvest in 2013, a farm on at Point McKenzie, and with grant money, second grant, we were able to help harvest that plot, pay the farmer, do a little bit more research in marketing and that sort of thing. And it just continued growing until we now have had our fourth harvest.
Wow. Well, and that was step two, right? Because first we had to identify if the plant would grow under cultivation, under farmed practices. We kind of knew that its sister plants would grow in the wild, but not all plants will respond well to cultivation. But then you had to determine if the Rosavin productivity in the root mass was where we wanted it to be, right?
Exactly. And a couple of years ago, we got a nice little grant from the University of Alaska Fairbanks to do some of those studies. We had a field, for example, that was planted at UAF Experimental Farm in Palmer. And I did a couple of summers of sample collection, trying to determine best harvesting times, et cetera.
Right.
And we learned a lot from that. And we learned a few things, like literally the plant needs to be at least 4 years old before there's enough rosavins. Timing of harvest is important. We still need to hone in on that a little bit more, primarily because, you know, in Alaska we have such different growing environments. What is working in Delta Junction, for example, which has a different seasonality to it, temperatures, et cetera, is different than what happens down on the Kenai.
Right.
So we're still trying to work out some of the details for each individual farmer, but it requires, you know, laboratory support, testing, and determining, you know, when to literally pull the plant out by its roots, because it's the roots that contain the ingredients.
Right. So walk us through that process a little bit after the plant is harvested. And I'll mention again that there's a great picture of you holding a couple of root masses on our social media post this morning. But after it's pulled out of the ground, and then what? And where does that next step happen?
It needs to be processed rather quickly. One of the studies I did was showing that even the roots don't die. I mean, you can hardly kill this plant. Let me tell you, even if you pull the roots out of the ground, they're alive, and they'll be alive for weeks, if not months.
Oh, wow.
But they start consuming their own adaptogenic ingredients very quickly after harvest. So you need to get them out of the ground into storage, not freezing, but kind of a root cellar type storage rather quickly. And then we begin processing. And currently, we process them at Anchor Point Greenhouse. We had been processing them at the UAF Experimental Farm Facility. It was really wonderful for them to let us borrow that facility for three harvests. We made a bit of a mess, but we cleaned up after ourselves. So what we do is then we take the roots and we carefully remove the dirt. By hand, we cut off the rootlets and the root hairs. And then these are very gnarly, sort of thick, fleshy root materials. They have a lot of nooks and crannies and crevasses in them. And we have to carefully wash those, because even if you bang them and bruise them hard, that can activate rosavin degradation.
Oh, wow.
So we wash those. We slice them then. Even using a dull knife or a dull slicer can increase rosavin degradation. So everything has to be sharp. And then we dehydrate them. We currently dehydrate them at 125 degrees Fahrenheit for 24 hours. And then we have a dried, bulk, chipped kind of chunky root material that's very durable that you can store. Now you've got something that you don't have to sort of worry so much about. You can store it in a dry, cool condition, and then from there you can continue, you know, any additional processing.
Okay. So just real quickly, one more reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the phone this morning is Dr. Petra Illig of Alaska Rhodiola Enterprises, and we're just talking about the harvest process. So now you have these dried kind of, I'm picturing like apple chips, like that you've dehydrated, yes. right? And, yes. And so is that what people eat to feel the benefits, or is there another step to the process?
Well, you have to extract the material. Historically, traditionally, people in northern tundras would take the root fresh out of the ground and either make a tea out of it straight right away, or many times in Russia, they would just chip it up and put it in a bottle of vodka as an extract. So what you need to do is extract it, and in some ways, you know, water, hot water is a very good extraction method. That's what tea is. You can get a little bit more of the material out if you add a little ethanol, being a, you know, universal organic solvent. So tinctures and extracts is sort of the first step. There are other ways of ingesting it. Some companies will take this dried root material, grind it down, and powder it. But there is an industry standard that I'd like to explain here before we continue on.
Sure.
Long time ago, when the Russians were really on the forefront of the rhodiola research, there was an industry standard set that basically means in order to call a product for human consumption, a rhodiola rosea supplement, it needs to contain at least 3% rosavins
okay.
Put by weight. Most plants can't grow it to 3% rosavins. When we do our tests, they're usually on the high 1% or the medium 2% rosavins. So many companies will do one of two things. They'll either powder the root and add extract to bring it up to 3%, or what I would like to do, because I think this is a better way, a more potent way to do it, is to extract completely, dry the extract into a powder. Then you can determine how much rosavins concentration is in that powder, and then you just add a little bit of a filler to the capsule.
Okay.
So that way you can know exactly how many milligrams of rosavins are in each capsule. That's actually my ultimate goal here with our product here is to create a standardized capsule in a known dosage so that healthcare providers, naturopaths can use it rather than just saying, oh, drink this in a tea form, because it changes from batch to batch.
Sure. You wouldn't know how much you were getting, and if you were seeing results, you wouldn't know how to repeat them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Dr. Illig, it's this is a fascinating topic, and I feel like we have barely skimmed the surface, and we are in our kind of our third little segment, and just to have a couple of minutes remaining. So I want to be sure, I want to be sure that we tell people where they can go to find more information about this. So talk to us about websites and other resources if folks are interested in learning more.
Certainly. I've switched gears from the co-op. The growers are doing just fine on their own. And as you mentioned, have a company called Alaska Rhodiola Enterprises, where our focus is on marketing for the farmers and product development. And it's the website is AK Rose Root.
Okay.
The reason it's Rose Root is because Rose Root is a common layperson's name for this plant.
Okay.
And you can get a ton of information there. You can also email me at akroseroot.com. I'm sorry, akroseroot@gmail.com.
Very good.
Or give me a call, 907-301-7276.
Okay.
We sell it online. We also sell it at a variety of stores in Alaska, Natural Pantry in Anchorage, for example, All About Herbs in Wasilla,
yep.
and Sunshine Foods in Fairbanks, and I'm having a senior moment here, stores in Valdez and Juneau as well. But we're looking for a much larger market, because right now product, our raw material, is still in the low 100s of pounds a year, and the botanical companies that are interested in buying the raw material from us are looking for thousands of pounds. So I can tell growers one thing: grow rhodiola and we can sell it for you.
Oh, very good. That's good to know. So you are looking for more growers, and if growers are interested in in trying out, you know, a couple rows of this plant. Mm-hmm. Are seedlings available, or would they be starting the plant from seed themselves, or where are we at in that process?
Yes, Alpine Dexter at Anchor Point Greenhouse is growing the seedlings. He's got the good system set up, and you can get them through him.
Okay.
Or you can get seeds from me. It's almost too late in the year to start them from seed unless you use a seeding hormone like gibberellic acid.
Okay.
I don't know if we have time to talk about how to germinate them. Do we have a couple minutes still?
We have about three-ish minutes left.
Okay. So basically there's two methods. The winter stratification method is to put the seeds, they're very tiny seeds. They're about 5,000 seeds per gram. They're very tiny seeds. And you put them out on moist potting soil in the middle of the winter, stick them outside and cover them up with snow. Don't
really?
Let them dry out, and you stick them outside, and by the time, you know, late May, June, when everything is melting and thawing, they will sprout. And then you can just care for them probably until the next year, until they're big enough to be put in the ground. Or you can sprout them using a dilute concentration of gibberellic acid, and we have instructions for that on our website.
Okay. Sounds like it would be much easier to make a trip down to Anchor Point Greenhouse and buy seedlings from Al, just saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a couple questions, and maybe these are unfair, but I'm guessing you'll know the answers. How many plants are in the ground right now? How many growers are you working with, and do you have an estimate of how many plants are in the ground?
It's hard to say simply because I'm no longer really running the co-op.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And I don't know how many growers are out there, but I would say there's probably somewhere along 100,000 plants in the ground.
Wow. After four harvests.
Yeah, I can tell you, here's what I'm thinking, and I've penciled this out. If we can get 100 acres going a year in production, we believe that it can bring in more money to farmers in Alaska than all of the other combined agriculture in the state.
What? Really?
I think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a challenge if we can get 100 acres going. All right. Well, I want to encourage any farmers that are listening to get in touch with Al Poindexter or Dr. Illig to find out more and consider maybe putting in some rhodiola rosea plants and see what the future brings.
We'd love that.
Yeah. And so, again, folks can find, if they were to go to one of these health food stores, should they ask for the product by name? By, you know, I'm looking for Alaska rhodiola. Are they looking for capsules, or what is actually for sale on shelves?
We don't have capsules yet. We have little bags of dried up, ground up root material for people to make their own tea. And I also make extract in 2-ounce bottles. It's still a cottage industry. I make them at home using basically store-bought vodka. And eventually, hopefully within the next 2 years, we'll have our act together enough to make those capsules in a standardized dose. But right now, it's just little bags of tea and the extract.
Okay, very good. Well, I guess we could always encourage you to use Alaska-grown vodka now that that's available and just add another value-added step to that process, right?
You're absolutely right, Amy. That's
okay.
On my list of things to do.
All right, perfect. Well, Petrus, thank you so much for joining me this morning on Ag Matters Radio. It's been a pleasure to learn about where the rhodiola industry is going, and I look forward to watching it grow more.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.